Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, it's me, Sam Baker. And before we go on with the show, I want to tell you about an exciting new initiative coming from The Shift. Many of you have asked how you can support the podcast further and get more Shift into the bargain. Well, now you have the opportunity to do just that by joining the Shift community. You can go to steady.media/theshift and become a member of the Shift. In return for supporting the podcast, you'll receive exclusive weekly newsletters, community membership, and plenty of other perks aimed at bringing us all closer together. That's steady.media/theshift. Hello and welcome to The Shift, the podcast that aims to tell the no-holds-barred truth about being a woman post-40, created and hosted by me, writer and broadcaster Sam Baker. I've lost count of the number of women I've spoken to who were taken totally by surprise by perimenopause, but to date, none of them actually had medical training. Today's guest changes all that. Before she's an award-winning writer, Christy Watson was a nurse. She spent 20 years on children's intensive care before her debut won the Costa First Novel Award and altered the trajectory of her life. Since then, Christy has written two best-selling nursing memoirs, including the wonderful The Language of Kindness and a second novel. Then, at the age of 42, perimenopause totally floored her. A single mum of two teenagers, she suddenly found herself a blubbering, snot-crying wreck in Sainsbury's car park, a stranger inside and out. Sound familiar?
And it was like losing my mind through losing my sense of self. And exactly. I just felt totally unprepared.
I met Christy in a no man's land opposite the American embassy, as you do, to talk being blindsided by menopause, grey pubic hair, biblical bleeding, and the impact of unresolved trauma. We also discussed being single in midlife and why nobody really has their shit together. Oh, and an unexpected use for frozen fish fingers. Christy, welcome to The Shift. I'm so happy to have you on and really, really happy to hear you're a fan. And I'm a massive fan. I loved the Language of Kindness. Thought I'm going to get that title wrong and really embarrass myself right up front. And I really loved Quilt on Fire because it did what I tried to do with The Shift, but I have to say a lot better. I think so many women who are in that kind of stage, early 40s, thinking, I feel a bit shit. I feel like I'm not me anymore, but I'm way too young for it to be menopause. I'm going to read it and go, oh, somebody just turned a big light bulb on. Mm. So congratulations.
Oh, thank you so much. And I am a huge fan of the book The Shift and the podcast The Shift. So I'm delighted to be with you and super excited to get into it.
Tell me about the fish finger freezer.
Well, I mean, the book is full of shame, as am I. The fish finger was the beginning, really, where I found myself sitting outside Sainsbury's just feeling totally dissociated and lost. And I thought I was having a spectacular breakdown, actually. I was just outside my own skin, my own body, my sense of self, and I was just watching everybody, and I just felt completely invisible and boiling, boiling hot. But no thoughts of menopause or perimenopause were going through my mind at all. I just thought, I'm losing my shit. looked in a spectacular fashion.
And you were what, 42 then?
42, yeah. And
a child, a whippersnapper.
Yeah, I ended up sort of going into Sainsbury's and also having that feeling of watching other women who were doing it much better. Yeah. You know, they had their tick boxes and they were putting healthy food in their trolleys and they had their meals planned. And I was just chucking in random stuff and just thinking, oh, I can't even just cope with a simple thing like being in Sainsbury's. And eventually I was so boiling, sweating, all felt dreadful that I just climbed into the fish finger freezer. It was something instinctive. And even then didn't think, okay, this is very abnormal behaviour. It just felt like a moment of reprieve from my life. And I remember just standing there and just feeling totally invisible in a freezer.
And nobody even looking, nobody going, no. Why has that woman got her head in the fish finger freezer?
No, my whole body. I mean, I was in it.
Was it a stand-up one or a lie-down
yeah,
one?
Yeah, stand-up freezer. I mean, lie-down right. would have been even more dramatic. Yeah. But
I just had Mission Street climbing over Sainsbury's security.
Yeah, but that's the moment that I knew I had to get help. And I managed to find people that helped me. But I kept bringing up, you know, I've just been in a fish finger freezer. This is not normal. This is not right. I can't carry on. This is not good. So that was the catalyst, I think, for the book and for my perimenopause.
Do you know what? I so identified with that because I used to have cans of Diet Coke in the fridge at work. And with hindsight, I should have had Iron Brew or something nobody else wanted to drink, because I would have my stash of cans of Diet Coke, not to drink, but to shove up my jumper in meetings, because I would just get so hot. And I'd go to the fridge. Some fucker would have nicked it.
Oh, no.
And now I can see, well, obviously you just would need a drink that nobody wants to drink.
Yeah.
I mean, I've spoken to people who have, like, frozen peas.
And, wow.
Yeah. And when you... I mean, let's just go straight there. At one point, you talk about having a vulva the size of Brazil.
Yes.
Which I think anybody who's ever had that is going to go, I know exactly what you mean. And the answer to that is frozen peas. But not if you're out and about, obviously. And obviously still in the bag.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just imagining all sorts of scenarios.
No,
A&E
keep
trips.
In the bag.
Yeah. But yeah, it was really weird. I mean, that whole section when I'm talking about, and I'm sure it must be, it's going to be a headline, isn't it? Christy Watson's vagina is the size of Brazil. I mean, I'm hoping it's not a headline, but that's how it felt. I just felt so out of sorts in every part of my body, not just my vulva, but every single aspect of my body. My feet grew a full size bigger.
I know, that's amazing.
It's incredible. My eyes were so dry. My gums were bleeding. My hair was falling out. I think for me, the neurological symptoms were the worst bit.
Yes.
And those were the things that I didn't expect. And it was like losing my mind through losing my sense of self. And
exactly.
I just felt totally unprepared.
Oh, God, there's so many different directions we could go now. And I think that loss of sense of self, like for me and for most women I've spoken to, it's the worst bit. But I wonder if it's the worst bit because it's the thing you really, really don't know. It's like, yeah, you know about the hot flushes. But then even when you start getting them, you kind of think, oh, no, it can't be that. The physical symptoms are much more talked about and written about. But I mean, I think you said in the fish finger bit, I've no idea how I'm feeling. And I really felt like I just didn't even know who I was. Before we started recording, you said like you felt like you were having a breakdown. And I think I did believe I was having a breakdown. I didn't know that I was going through perimenopause. But Christy, you're a nurse.
Yeah.
I know you worked with children in intensive care. So gynae wasn't exactly your specialism. But if a nurse doesn't know, what the fuck hope is there for the rest of us?
Yeah, and doctors are contacting me now who've sort of read early proofs and said, oh, I didn't realise I was perimenopausal. Thank you so much. And so that says so much, doesn't it? And we have a big conversation going on thanks to you and thanks to other sort of pioneers of talking about this. But still, people aren't really aware of those things. And I think it was that idea that oestrogen being a master neurological regulator that I didn't understand. And I think there's something, again, so much deeper than the physical going on when we are going through this massive metamorphosis. It's a huge transformation that actually is terrifying until you dig into it, and then it can become really magical.
Yeah.
And so you can be in a state of terror or a state of awe, depending on how much information you have and how much you understand of it. And that, for me, felt like a really important reason for us all to keep talking about it and for things like this podcast to keep happening, because it can be such a beautiful time, I think.
Wait, how old are you now?
So I'm 45.
So in that 3 years, and the journey of the book is the same, and the journey of my book was the same, actually, you start out absolutely desperate, and by the end, you're like, kind of get this. I think there's something really interesting going on.
Interesting is the right word. It's much more interesting than the notion of just hot flushes or rage, which we all know about, or hopefully we know about. It's almost like when I started writing Quilt on Fire, you know, we're thinking about the cover, and the cover is actually a quilt that we had a quilter in America make this quilt.
Oh, wow.
Which is so beautiful. But actually, what's really beautiful is the underside of the quilt. It's the bit at the back where all the work's gone into it, and the threads are coming apart and a bit undone. And for me, yes, the front looks lovely, but it's the back that's the interesting bit. And that's the bit that I hope that we're getting to at midlife, is understanding that we're all a bit broken open, not necessarily broken, but broken open and undone. And nobody has their shit together. Not even those women in Sainsbury's I looked at had their meal planners. They probably had their shit not together at all.
That's what I was going to say to you. A few times you refer to like these polished women, and I know exactly what you mean and exactly how you feel, and like, oh, the cold water swimmers and all that. And the cold water swimmers make me feel so bad. I feel like, oh, I should be cold water swimming. I live nearish the sea and I don't cold water swim. But actually, when I really think about it, I don't know any of those women. My 40s were really shit, and I don't think I got it together until my 50s. But when you live your life a certain way, because you kind of think you have to, even if, you know, and I'm hoping that the Gen Z and that will all be much more together than us and better and different and all of that. But I certainly felt like I, and a lot of the women around me, you're doing the thing that you're meant to do, and you're agonising about whether or not to have children, if you can have children and all of that. And then I found perimenopause like a compulsory reset. It's like I didn't have any choice but to really look at, like you say, the underside of the quilt and look at where all the threads are hanging and where the potential holes are, and kind of address that and maybe put myself back together in a slightly different way than maybe I was before.
Yeah, I think that's right. And that's really beautiful. I'd love to say that I'm as far moved along as you are, Sam, but I'm not. For example, I can think very deeply and philosophically about finding meaning and spirituality and making sense of academic and intellectual arguments about this time of our life. And, you know, I've sort of dug very deep to think about those things. But I'm also really shallow and superficial and vain at the same time. And I think that's the beauty of it, in a way, is that we can be all things. We don't need to be one thing or another thing. We can be a cold water swimmer who still, I don't know, dances on the table on a night out. And we can still be those women who are sort of multifaceted and able to do all the things. And yeah, but the thing about me being a nurse is very interesting. And I think there must be so many nurses, doctors, medical professionals, allied health professionals who are going through this and don't realise, because it's not something that's kind of taught enough. It is taught, but it's not taught enough or spoken about enough. And I think it's one of those things, until it happens to you, it's very behind glass. You don't really understand or embody it or feel it and know the impact of how it's going to feel. And some people swim through, cold swim through their menopause and their perimenopause.
With one of those really expensive dry robe things as
You know what? I really want a dry robe. Don't go cold swimming. I just know I'm going to sit there watching TV in a dry robe.
I will.
But I do know women who seem to have sailed through this time of their lives, and I'm very fascinated by that as well. I think that speaks to unresolved trauma. It speaks to obviously character and individual ways of coping, but I think there's something much, much bigger that we haven't quite got to in philosophy, really, about why that is, why some women go off sex entirely, for example, and others become sex maniacs.
Speaking personally.
But, you know, why some women completely sail through this time of their lives and others have such a rocky period. And, of course, there's a huge, huge number of women that don't get through this time and end up very, very sadly losing their lives to suicide. And this is the peak age for it with women. So it's so individual, and yet it's a collective experience, but individuals respond in so many different ways, and I think that's fascinating.
Yeah, I think as people start to talk about menopause, which is a really good thing, you also start to see kind of a new sort of judgment come into the conversation. So I think when 2 or 3 years ago, before the shift came out, but when I'd written it, there was still a sense that HRT was shame, but you were a bit of a traitor to the feminist cause if you went on HRT, that you were messing with nature, all of that. It could be hard to get it, all of that. And then now, as the conversation shifted, I feel like there's starting to be a, well, you must take HRT. It's like, well, no, why does it have to be one thing or the other? Why does everything about women's health have to be a judgment issue? Why can't it just be different women have a different experience and want to treat it a different way? And it's kind of depressing.
Yeah, it is depressing. And it's that word, treat it, like we need treating,
yeah,
isn't it? And it's just so, I suppose, prejudiced against women. Women's health is such a minefield.
What do you think about, there's a bit of an ongoing debate or newish debate about reframing HRT in menopause and basically calling it estrogen deficiency, not, or hormone deficiency, I can't remember the exact phrase. And when I first saw that debate, I thought, oh no, because then that's making it like menopause is like a wrong thing and has to be treated, as opposed to it being a choice. What do you, as a kind of a healthcare professional, all be in a different area, what do you think about that?
I think it's complex and I can see why there would be an argument for it. However, it feels a bit ageist to me because we're talking about older women then as deficient in some way, particularly women of previous generations who didn't take HRT in the way that we are starting to. I think it's still only 1 in 10 women are taking HRT now. And of course, we're talking from a very, very Eurocentric, well, not even Eurocentric, Western UK perspective. And that's a place.
And white and privileged.
And white and privileged. And so we are not seeing perimenopause and menopause in the same way that many other women from other cultures and other countries do, which is a kind of superpower. Mm. And we have so much to learn from other countries, other cultures, and how they revere older women and see it as a really positive change. And of course, liberating in certain countries because you're free of having to think about childbirth. So we're thinking in a very kind of insular way, maybe. But I don't agree that it's estrogen deficiency. I think the word deficiency is problematic.
Very.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's implying that it's a thing you need to rectify.
Yeah. Having said that, conversely, I feel estrogen deficient. So I can see both sides of that argument.
Do you?
Yeah, well, I don't That's now because I've got a massive HRT patch on my abdomen. So I don't. But, you know, whether psychologically and emotionally I will get over that and then feel less deficient and able to live in a different way and post-change. I think the word change is good, actually.
Yeah.
I think reclaiming that word rather than deficient is a much better description because we are changing. As much as it's difficult to go through, it's really positive, ultimately, I think.
I think one of the things that really struck me is that, you know, like you say, it's change and it's a change that, you know, it's inevitable and it's like puberty, but at 45, 50, 55, with all the responsibility and shit that goes with being 50, not 15. Mm. But when you're 15, ideally, you're well-informed, you're helped through it, you're also Gen Z, so you're not taking any shit. And at 50, you're just, like, stuck in the corner. I mean, it's like, if only it was treated the same way as puberty. But, I mean, I guess with puberty, it's like puberty is, like, the beginning. And at the moment, menopause is the end.
Yeah, I think in France they call it the second adolescence, which I absolutely love.
Yes.
And it does feel like that. It feels turbulent, but also exciting at the same time and liberating, definitely, and reckless in many ways. And those are the bits that aren't really spoken about. We keep coming back to the hot flushes and rage, and it's like, what else is going on here? There's a lot happening with me and all my female friends, an awful lot.
I was so jealous when I read about your, well, I've actually written Menopause Club, which I don't think you do call them, but so jealous when I read about your female friends, because when I started having my symptoms at 46, I think that was when I began to work out what was going on. I messaged lots of friends, and they were all like, we don't know what you're talking about. And wow. I wasn't the oldest or anything. And so when I read about your friends all going through it and talking about it and WhatsApping, oh my God, I would have killed for a WhatsApp group.
Yeah, it's all we talk about. But, you know, we talk about messiness and how we're all messy. And then it does feel like a club where you actually not only want to be in that club, but you feel totally accepted and seen, completely seen. Mm. It's the opposite of the invisibility that I was talking about in Sainsbury's. I feel so seen by my female friends, and they do hopefully by me. And that's so important.
Tell me a bit about your friends.
Oh, they're brilliant. I'm so lucky. You know, I write a lot about dating and romantic relationships in the book, but actually it's my female friendships that I just think are the most enduring, supportive, and probably the most important relationships of my entire life. And I've got friends that I'm lucky enough to have had forever.
I'm so jealous.
Oh, it's just the best thing. And I mean, they're like sisters, really. I haven't got sisters, but I have got sisters. I've got a whole army of them. And we squabble and we fall out sometimes, but we are family. And to go through a sea change like this and experience life, not only during perimenopause, but during this very turbulent time of pandemic, and the fact that we are all in a midlife situation, we're all at this vantage point now where suddenly the entire world has changed and we've all changed at the same time. It feels to me like the pandemic really speaks to midlife, because it's a time of profound change and no going back. And you can kind of from this mountaintop see a prospective future, like, what do I want from life? Do I want to move to Edinburgh? Do I want to start cold water swimming? Do I want one of those coats where I can just sit and watch TV? But what exactly do I want from life? It's finite and it's very, very precious. And the perimenopause teaches you that. So did the pandemic, I think, or so does the pandemic.
Yeah, it did in a way. I think it made that personal turmoil a bit easier, weirdly, because kind of everybody was going through thrown into this weird isolation, forced introspection,
And we're all thinking about mortality in a very different way.
Yeah.
Whatever age we are now, we're all at midpoint. So everybody's midlife, and everybody's thinking about death and life and how to live it and how things can turn on a dime. And one minute the world can look a certain way and the next minute can be totally different. And so the clash of those two things for me has been a real gift.
You're very positive about it. Is that like a today thing, or is that like a this is where you're at now with it?
I think I'm at this now. I think it's taken me writing the book to really think, to really understand and unpick, and it's been quite cathartic and therapeutic for me to write my way into an understanding of what this means for me, and it is completely individual. But I am quite excited about the next bit, and I do feel like walking around with my eyes wide open to much more what it means to be me, what it means to be a woman, what it means to be living during this time of great suffering, and what this thing is, this life. And so I feel really positive. I'm in a very happy place, and that has taken me a good couple of years to get to, of a lot of hard work, a lot of therapy, a lot of HRT, getting that right, but mainly a lot of introspection and listening to a lot of podcasts like yours, which has been really helpful. You and
thanks.
Oprah, Sam, saved my life.
Well, that's, I'm literally not going to be able to get my head out the door now. Tell me a bit about the therapy, because as regular listeners know, I also had decided to have therapy. Although decided isn't really the right word. It was almost like an imperative for me at that point. But tell me about that, because you also, like me, were not really tolerant of therapy culture before you had it. So what led to it? What made you...
So I felt like I was having a spectacular breakdown, and I'm a single parent of teenagers and I've got all that going on, and I thought I am going to end up hospitalised. I felt that unwell. I wasn't sleeping at all. For me, that was the worst bit, actually, is just no sleep whatsoever. And so everything was sort of out of focus, and I strongly suspected that I was incredibly depressed. And I went along to this therapist. And again, like you, I was a bit suspicious of the therapy culture. So I ended up meeting about three or four before I found one that I thought would be a good fit. And didn't think about it at the time, but she was a much older woman. It's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
And so I was looking for an older, wiser woman who'd been through this hump subconsciously, but I didn't realise at the time. And so she very quickly said to me, have you been to the GP? Where are you with your periods? And my periods are still regular. I still get periods.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah. So I've got a way to go.
Yeah, when they're gone, you'll be happy.
Yeah, yeah. But I said I'm getting regular periods. Didn't think anything.
So they weren't the biblical perimenopausal.
They were very, very heavy. They were getting heavy.
Nightmare.
Heavier. Biblical bleeding. Yeah. Which, again, I just thought it would creep away. Periods must just creep away and then you're left with nothing. Instead, it was like a flood.
Yeah, it's literally like that scene in Carrie, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
And it's, I know people think you're exaggerating, but the number of people, and I'm definitely one of them, who have bled through over car seats, tube seats, it's just like... And that's not because you left it 6 hours, it's because nothing can last more than an hour.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, I think there's something more than physical going on there. It's an explosion of something internal. It is biblical.
It's
You're just
really
thinking, wow, I'm just going to bleed all over the place.
Yeah.
But so she very quickly said, I think this could be hormonal, and I think you should go to your GP and carry on talking to me if you want to. And so I was very suspicious of that. I went along to my GP and the GP
said... basically said to you it could be menopause.
Yeah, she did.
And you were like, what the fuck?
Well, I just thought she was wrong. I thought, there's no way. I'm 42. I mean, I've got at least 10 years. I'm a nurse. I know my own body and I'm still getting periods. And I went along to the GP who also agreed. I was very, very lucky. Very lucky. And I had a GP who immediately said, well, we can do a blood test because you're under 45. But even if it doesn't show anything, I think we should try HRT and see if it makes you feel better.
Yeah. And I think there's probably like thousands of women listening to this now going, that's not fair.
I know. I know. I was so, so lucky. So I think it was a combination of those things that really...
It shouldn't be luck, though, should it?
It shouldn't be luck. It shouldn't be luck. I think it is changing, thanks to things like this podcast. But obviously, we've got such a way to go for so many people. But the therapy, yeah, the therapy was absolutely brilliant. And again, it's such a place of privilege to be able to go and get therapy, isn't it? It's just amazing.
And to be privilege. Able to pay for it, yeah.
Yeah, and I couldn't really afford it. But I couldn't afford not to, to be honest. Mm, it was at that point.
Exactly the same. Yeah.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.
Couldn't afford it. I couldn't afford to not.
Yeah.
And you mentioned earlier unresolved trauma, and I definitely had an unresolved trauma that I had no plan of resolving actually at that point. So was that the same for you? Did you get to a place where you were like, I've just got to deal with this, or I'm not going to be able to do the putting myself back together with the benefit of hindsight?
Yeah, I think with the benefit of hindsight, I think that we all just carry so much trauma, all of us. And multiple traumas, many, often, and really serious traumas like you went through. And, you know, I think you can leave the worm at the bottom of the tequila bottle, but eventually you've got to get to the worm. You've got to get to the worm. And so the only way to do that is a very painful process of digging it up. But unless you do, you're never fully whole, I don't think. And so for me, it was acknowledging that women carry trauma, including me, and, you know, going through that process of not necessarily trying to deal with it, but just acknowledge it and just say, okay, this is, you know, perhaps part of why I'm having such a terrible time going through a perimenopause. Might not be, but it's another thing to talk about and be open about. And, yeah, it was interesting what you were saying about Gen Z, and I hope that things change because of Gen Z. And isn't Alpha the next generation?
Oh, I mean, gosh. Must have gone the
Alpha,
full lap.
We've gone the full lap, but people are talking very openly, even compared to us. And I think that's only got to be a good thing because, for example, my mum says she never experienced any symptoms of the menopause. And I'm really suspicious of that. Mm. I'm very suspicious of that. Maybe she did, maybe she didn't, but maybe she's just not able to talk about it.
Maybe she wasn't allowed to experience them.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I mean, maybe that wasn't an option for our mums or our mum's mums. My mum said to me, we just got on with it. And that's the thing that came up again and again when I was researching the book. We just got on with it.
Mm.
And I think that you know, maybe we're lucky in that we don't have to just get on with it.
Yeah, it is interesting, isn't it? Because one of the chapters is called Make the Fucking Most of It, because I met a woman who was dying. She was in her 50s, and a piece of advice that she gave me was make the fucking most of it, because you just don't know what's happened. Because essentially, even going through this awful time, and maybe that's why I'm in a really happy, good place, is because the alternative than going through the perimenopause and the perimenopause is death.
Yes.
How lucky we are.
Yes.
How lucky we are to be here, and how lucky we are to bleed in biblical ways and unravel our quilts and get to the threads and look at the worm and face our traumas, and how lucky that is to be able to get the chance to grow psychologically and emotionally. And it's a privilege that not every woman has. And I think I became acutely aware of that, not just writing the book, but obviously during the pandemic as well. It feels like
so many people
are less lucky than we are to just be sitting here and chatting. And I think that realization was really helpful in terms of my overall happiness as well.
Isn't there? There's a sense that, you know, if you're a woman predominantly, you're almost like discouraged from aging. Aging is frowned upon. So you either have to like pretend that you aren't, or go away and do it quietly somewhere.
Yeah, it's true, isn't it? I mean, this whole anti-aging, what the hell is that? Anti-aging, yeah. Pro-aging, pro-getting older, pro-getting wiser, my goodness. And I just think, yeah, we are such an ageist society. Not only does this time of our life make us realise that, but again, the pandemic made us realise that. The first people who were written off were those older people
literally
in care homes.
Literally written off.
It was about ageism.
Yeah, and written off now, because, I mean, I've come down from Scotland where we still have masks and some restrictions, and in London, it's like everybody in London thinks they're in some COVID-free bubble. No masks, no nothing. But what about the people who've had to shelter and quarantine the whole time? Are we just saying, we don't really care about your lives? Because now everybody who can is going back to normal, and the rest of you, is that what we're saying? I don't know.
It's very confusing, isn't it? We live in two parallel worlds, and you can't see the other world until you enter it. So most people who are living in the kingdom of the well and the kingdom of the young can't imagine. And I was that. Can't imagine the kingdom of the old and the kingdom of the sick, which is what will happen to all of us, either one or the other, or both. Most likely both.
It's like we don't want to live there, so we're just going to pretend it's not going to happen.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And there is a protective factor in that, which is probably necessary in order that people live their lives and make mistakes and be young and be happy and free and all those things. But it is a great divide that has only become greater because of the pandemic, I think. And there is a selfishness to not understanding that there is another parallel world out there that is directly affected by how we live our lives, all of us.
Do you think that to any extent that applies to the menopause? Because one of the reasons I wanted to write The Shift and start the podcast is that I was like, I don't want this to happen to younger women. I don't want younger women to be blindsided by this absolute shitty experience, and that forearmed is forewarned. But I have had messages from people on social media, younger women, saying, can you just fucking stop? Because I'm scared.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, no, you don't need to be scared. You just need to know what it is if it happens.
Yeah.
But it did make me wonder, actually, has all along there been people talking about menopause? We just have been going, la, 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 I'm not listening until it hits us.
I suspect so. I suspect that is the case, because it's not a new conversation necessarily. It's just that once we're in the conversation, we like to say, oh, it's a new conversation.
Our conversation. Sorry, guilty
as charged. And now
it's
relevant to me.
Exactly.
It's not a new conversation. Women have always been talking about these things. They've just been talking in different ways and listening in different ways. And language has evolved and become much more direct and a bit heavy hitting sometimes. But it's a bit like childbirth. I remember giving birth to my daughter was considered a natural birth. It was horrific. And it was just horrific. I felt like I had been run over by a truck. And what surprised me was that nobody had warned me that that was how it would feel. But I see the point of the person that emailed you, because I think had someone warned me, look, it will feel like a truck is going to run over your body slowly. And that's normal.
And then reverse.
And then reverse. But I think if I had been told that, I would have been terrified. So I do understand. However, I think information can only be a good thing. And I agree with you that forewarned is forearmed as well.
It's like there's a point in the book where you're talking about that what you don't know won't hurt you thing, which has been handed down to us. And it's like, well, I don't know. I mean, childbirth does hurt people. Perimenopause does hurt people. So
Yeah, and I think that the other reason it's very, very important for us all to be talking about it is because not only is it a massive shock to women, but to men.
Oh, yeah.
To the men of these women who are suddenly, I mean, the divorce rate is way upticked with the suicide rate, of course, at the age that you're going through perimenopause. And it's like no one has linked the dots.
Yeah. When I was doing the audiobook of The Shift, the producer was a guy a little bit older than me, late 50s, and he said to me afterwards, I don't think I'd have been divorced if I'd read this book.
Wow.
But the flip side of that is, like, when you talked earlier about recklessness, for some women there is almost a sense of just putting a bomb under your life. And I think, like, a lot of marriages break down because the men don't know what's going on, but also that a lot of them break down because the women reach a point where they're just like, fuck it. Fuck it. What's the worst thing that can happen?
Yeah, absolutely. And there's power in the fuck it, isn't there?
Yeah, that's the thing. Yeah.
And sometimes, you know, you do need a relationship bomb or a bomb in your life to kind of set things in a completely different way. But it's interesting, you're talking about that kind of, I suppose, silence that's been passed down through the generations, or different ways of talking, different ways of using language. I think there's almost a club outside my female friendship club, which is very interesting to me, because at the same time as I'm becoming invisible to men, I'm becoming visible to older women. And so it's a bit like, you know, if you're pregnant, or for example, my friend who had cancer said that as soon as she had cancer, she saw cancer everywhere. Everywhere. But she hadn't seen it before. I will be in a restaurant or cafe or walking down the street, and a much, much older woman will just give me a glance, and there's an expression of something between us, and I'm not quite sure what it is yet, but it's mischief.
Yes.
It's mischief, yeah. And I love it. I'm in a new club. And it's one that I didn't know existed. And it's better than the club where men are looking at you in a sleazy way. It's much better.
Way better than that club.
It's great.
Do you feel like that now? Because at the beginning of the book, I definitely got a sense that you were a bit like, oh, I don't know whether I like this not being looked at.
Yeah.
Especially not when you're in the freezer, obviously. But.
Yeah. I felt the loss of it. I felt the power of the change of that, and thought initially that it was a very negative thing to be invisible, but of course it's a superpower.
Yeah.
It's a superpower, and I don't miss it at all. And it's surprising now, you know, you get the occasional glance, whereas it used to be sort of a constant ogling.
Yeah.
And that kind of shocks me, and I go, oh, I remember that. That's kind of a weird thing.
Yeah.
I'm really glad to be moving out of that and free of it, and in the club where much, much older women are giving me mischievous, sneaky looks. I like that club more.
You mentioned earlier about the kind of the youth obsession of society. And there's a moment where I really laughed out loud. You were like, oh, woe is me. I'm single in midlife and I've got grey pubic hair. Mm. Or maybe a grey pubic hair or two, as opposed to whole. Mine didn't go whole, did yours?
No.
Just the odd flash of...
Yeah, there's still time. But, you know,
yeah, there is,
I mean,
still
that,
time.
That,
yeah.
I'll
check back in.
Check back in, let me know. But yeah, that, I think I wanted to just sum up that idea that, you know, I can be an academic, professional, intellectual, hopefully successful writer, but I can also absolutely freak out about the fact that I've got three grey hairs. I mean, I went for a full Hollywood on discovering the three grey hairs.
That was such an interesting reaction.
It was
ridiculous.
It was a ridiculous reaction. And again, I was just in this beautician's beauty parlour. I don't know, waxing parlour. I don't know what you call them, but just the moment of, again, I'll get back to the shame and humiliation of realising, what am I doing? On the one hand, I'm kind of just, you know, a fairly normal becoming middle-aged woman, and on the other hand I've found myself here having a full Hollywood. What on earth am I thinking?
Talking of pain.
But yeah, I just think that it's okay to be absurd and ridiculous and messy, as well as deep in thought and philosophical about things as well. You can be all the things. That's okay.
I mean, it is such a shock, isn't it? The physical changes, even if you're expecting them, it's such a shock. And I feel like I'm whatever now, I don't care, but still, sometimes you accidentally look in the mirror, and I don't really want to live a life where I don't want to look in the mirror, and you're kind of like, oh god, where did that happen, who is that, you know? But that's okay, that's normal to feel like that, I think. I hope.
Yeah, my nan's 95, I think now. I need to get that right. But she says she looks in the mirror and she's shocked every time, because she still expects to see her 18-year-old self. And that I think, is how it is for everyone.
Yeah.
She's still shocked. She's 95. She goes, oh, gosh, I'm old. But, you know, she's beautiful. She's absolutely beautiful inside and out. So it's interesting.
Yeah, you wrote a beautiful thing about Botox, about not having Botox, and about the kind of lines in her face. Can you tell us a bit about your reason for not wanting to have Botox? Not that you need to have a reason, but, you know, people do, people don't.
People do, and again, I think it's such an individual choice, and I'm not for the haters, you know? Do what you want to do. Everyone should just do what they want to do. But for me, I think because I've spent my career and my life so up close and touching and smelling and tasting death right in front of me, you know, I do see lines and wrinkles, and my hands particularly. I write a bit about my hands because my hands are...
Show me your hands.
I mean, they're not too bad today. I've had cream on. But they're like elephant skin.
You're just going to have to take my word for it. They're not. Because, well, yeah, you said that your rude friend saying your hands were older than you.
Oh, no, she's not rude. She's lovely. She's lovely. But she, yeah, she was like trying to get me to wear hand gloves at night with cream on it. But I think that I can appreciate in other people very much a face that looks like it's seen things and lived. And they're the most beautiful faces to me, and the most beautiful hands to me are those kind of hardworking hands that you think, what have those hands done? And so I have to practice what I preach with myself, and I don't want to be younger or look younger at all. I really don't. I think that I've got a relationship with that side of things that is probably informed by nursing and being around people that have just seen a lot. I think there's real wisdom in that, and I like the wisdom side of it. Seeing wisdom on someone's face or in their eyes is a really, I suppose, powerful thing for me to aspire to one day, hopefully. Get a bit of wisdom is what I'd like to do now, definitely.
Tell me a bit about, because you found yourself single. I mean, I said you found yourself such a weird phrase, and it's like you just woke up one morning and there you were. But you were out of a long-term relationship, a single mum with two kids at this stage of your life. What was it like going back into the kind of, the mere thought of it is just like terrifies me, the idea of having to like get naked in front of a complete stranger. What was the whole dating thing like? When you were going through all of this as well, what was it like being back out there?
It was a form of hell. It was absolutely horrendous. Again, I had a terrible time, and I'm very lucky now. I've been in a very stable, loving relationship for over a year, so that's all great.
Yeah, I can't say anything because I don't want to spoil the book. But
yeah.
I was so like,
no, I'm
little
in a
cheer.
Great place now. The fact that it was online dating just didn't really suit me, and I suppose because I was...
God, does it suit anybody?
I think, you know, people. I've got friends who are married, they've met people online, so it does
work. Yeah,
actually,
I do know people who've met people online.
I think
online.
People can meet online. That's how lots of people meet now. But if you're someone like me who is at a point where you're absolutely struggling with your identity and you don't know who you are, and you can just blow in the wind depending on who's blowing you in which direction, then that's a very dangerous time to be meeting anyone retrospectively.
Yeah. Well, it's like you describe it as a shark tank, and that kind of does feel like I completely get that, and I feel like being in that state, it's almost like the sharks are going to smell that.
Oh gosh, yeah. I mean, I was completely vulnerable without knowing I was vulnerable. You don't see yourself as vulnerable as a woman in her 40s, it's kind of, but I really was. And then putting yourself out there to meet strangers, and I did have some really lovely experiences, I have to say. I met some really good people, but they were few and far between. I clocked up an array of horror stories before I thought, I've got to get out of this shark tank. It's not doing me any favours at all. But I think that was much more about me than people I was meeting, because like you said, I was attracting narcissists and I was attracting people who could smell vulnerability a mile off.
Almost back like being a teenage girl.
It was exactly like being a teenage girl. It was exactly like that. And it was interesting to go through, but I think probably quite damaging. And again, I was very lucky to be able to see what was happening with my female friends around me who were sort of saying, abort, abort. This guy's a psychopath. Because I was like, oh, he's so nice. Nope. So yeah, I had that kind of protective group of friends around me who were really helpful at letting me see things that I couldn't quite see for whatever reason.
Talking of puberty, you were in perimenopause at the point your daughter must have been going through puberty. How is that?
Well, she kind of dealt with it a lot better than I did. She's kind of sophisticated. It's interesting because I think girls now go through puberty a decade younger than we think they're going to, so they're sort of 9 and 10 rather than 16. So she'd almost got over the hump of puberty, but of course living through pandemic and mental health and being a young woman and all those things clashed with my perimenopause. And actually, her and my son didn't really get it. Still don't really want to talk about it, even though I'm like, talk about my perimenopause. And they are sick of me talking about my perimenopause. But I want them to know all of me and not in slices. The good, the bad, the ugly, the fact that I'm imperfect. And that's okay. So that they can bring their good, bad, ugly and imperfect selves too. Because I want to know them fully as well. And I don't think they're quite there yet, but I'm certainly there, and they have their hands over their ears most of the time when we're discussing perimenopause,
like,
or whatever.
I don't want to hear about this.
Don't tell me anymore. I don't need to hear it. But yeah, I think their understanding of perimenopause was you'll have hot flushes at the beginning of the journey, yeah. And now they see it's much more than that.
Mum will be hot and angry, and that's it.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I remember a woman getting in touch with me quite early on in the shift, and she said that, you know, the thing is, it's all very well, but what if you live with, you know, a man and teenage children who just basically take the piss out of you? What am I supposed to do then? And I couldn't answer. What would you say to her?
Oh gosh, that's a really difficult one. I can only assume that if people are taking a piss or teasing, that they don't understand how deeply it's affecting you. So I guess everything in the world comes down to communication, doesn't it? Everything starts and ends with how we communicate with each other. So I'd probably sit down and have a really open, honest, cryy discussion and let your feelings be really apparent and don't hold any emotions in.
I mean, I think that's good advice, but I'm guessing that they're not going to respond to that.
I would then sell up and move somewhere abroad and live on my own.
Kick
in an ashram.
Yeah.
I'd say, you know, I've tried the communication bit, I've tried crying, you're still taking the piss, so enjoy Sainsbury's.
Okay. Yeah. You plan the meals for the next 20 years.
Yeah, enjoy your life. I'm off to live in an ashram somewhere far away. But yeah, I think it is a really serious issue that it sounds to me like they really don't get the seriousness and understand how difficult it is. But yeah. It's a hard one, isn't it?
I mean, that's kind of media representation as well, isn't it? I mean, it's getting a little bit better now, but you don't see many women over 40. Or if you do, they're Judi Dench or Helen Mirren or Nicole Kidman. And if there is a female character going through the menopause on TV, she's puffy, sweaty and angry.
Mm.
Literally, the three dwarfs that go around with you the whole time. So it's hardly surprising if that's what you see, that's what you reflect, but if you're a man or a teenage boy or a teenage girl, that's what you reflect back on your perimenopausal mum, I suppose.
Yeah.
Blame the media.
Definitely. Always blame the media.
I just want to go back to the point you were making about wisdom, because it just feels like such a nice, uplifting point to kind of end on. There's a lovely anecdote towards the end of the book about wise women and wanting to be a woman who flies in colour. Can you tell us that?
Yeah. I think other cultures, my children's dad is Nigerian, and Nigerian women have a very different approach to menopause. And I was doing a book tour in Nigeria, and I was in a place called Abeokuta, which we went out to visit libraries. And one of the other writers that I was working with, we'd gone out to see lots of different children and talk to them and find out about books. And there were kind of thousands of children just sitting and basically being really well behaved, which surprised me so much, because
yes.
I just thought, wow, I don't think this would happen in the UK. But one of the other writers I was working with said that she'd asked the children, why do you read books? Why are books important? And a few of the boys had stood up and said, oh, I want to study engineering or medicine or science. And this little girl stood up and she said, I want to be wiser. I think she said, I want to be like my grandmother or something like that. And she said, I read because I want to fly in colour. And I just thought it was so beautiful. And
it's lovely.
Yeah, it's lovely, isn't it? And getting older and wiser, and books, are about learning to fly in colour. That stayed with me forever, really.
I really love the idea of that. It just feels like so hopeful and so much about what we gain.
Mm. Yeah, it's gaining, not losing. And it's coming to terms with that is the process.
Okay, questions I always ask. What's your emotional age?
14. Sad to say, but true.
Why 14?
I've just never lost that very cheeky sense of humour. And so I will find things absolutely hilarious that my son, who's similar age, will find hilarious. And people kind of look at us like, why are you both laughing at that stupid joke? But I think I'm kind of stuck there, definitely.
Give me a book recommendation.
So I read a book recently called No Cure for Being Human by Kate Bowler, who I mention in the book, and it had such a big effect on me. She is a professor at Duke University in America, and she's very funny. She laughs a lot about the absurd, but in this book she talks about the fact that she got a stage 4 colon cancer diagnosis at the age of 35, and it was about making sense of what that meant for her life. And I think the book definitely for me sums up that this now is a privilege, and what I'm going through and hopefully will carry on going through in terms of perimenopause and menopause is just such an amazing space to be in. And it's not a sort of hard-hitting or heavy-handed book. She talks a lot about absurd things and funny things. For example, she got her diagnosis the day after she just published a book called Blessed, and she found that the most ironic thing ever. But yeah, she is an incredible writer, and she has something really important to say, which is the perfect combination.
I'm going to check that out. What advice would you give younger women?
That nobody's doing it any better than you are. That we're all a big old mess. And I'd give that advice to myself as well.
Yeah, it's almost like, in fact, that is like one of those like embarrassing posters. You almost want to put it on your wall to remind yourself.
Yeah.
Who's your old bird role model?
So it's probably my grandmother, who is that kind of mischievous, cheeky, sneaky person. She's 95 now. She still has her hair done every week. Every time I see her, she says, "Fucking Boris Johnson." Oh. She's massively political. And she's enormously wise. And so I think she's probably, and I'm very lucky to have lots of older women role models in my family, but she's probably the top one.
She sounds great. Do you know what happened with her menopause?
Again, she says that she didn't have any symptoms at all, and then she starts reeling loads of symptoms out. So she perhaps didn't have a language for it.
How old was she? Do you know?
39. Because on my 40th birthday, she phoned me up and said, "Happy birthday. By the way, I went through the menopause when I was your age." And then she started singing "Happy Birthday," and I was still on the other end of the phone. What? Yeah, she was 39. She thought she was pregnant. And they said, "No, you're going through the change."
Wow.
Yeah.
Fascinating. And you ignored that, presumably.
Totally, because how could it happen to me?
Yeah, I would have done too, yeah. What's your superpower?
I think radical acceptance is my superpower of myself now, which has taken a lot of work, but always of others. Just radically accepting people as they are. I think that's a particular superpower.
That's a big superpower.
Yeah.
And lastly, how many fucks do you give?
I'd love to say zero. I'm too neurotic, anxious and a bit narcissistic to say zero. So I'm going to say 5. I give 5 fucks, but I really hope there's lots of work. Eventually I'll be able to give 0. Check in 10 years now.
Yeah, I will too. You'll be back.
I'll be back.
Thank you, Christy.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening. You can hear a new episode of The Shift each Tuesday, wherever you get your podcasts. If you like what you hear, please do rate, review and follow, because it really does help other people find us. And if you'd like to support The Shift further, please consider becoming a member of our community. Find out more at steady.media/shift.
Okay, I have 2 new obsessions that I need to share with you. Impress No Glue Press-On Manis and Impress Press-On Falsies Lashes. Trust me, these are getting ready game changers. Both require no glue, so there is no damage to your natural nails and lashes, no mess, and no annoying dry times. Just one step and you're done. Boom. Instant glam. Visit impressbeauty.com/presson and use code PRESSON25 at checkout for 25% off Impress manicure and Press-On falsies.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's stamps.com code program.